That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, live on FUBAR Radio, and we are here for a full hour, more or less, to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to make you better with your money. I say this quite often. Schools forgot to teach it to you. Universities forgot to teach it to you. Your job is definitely not going to teach it to you. So that's what we're going to do. It's called That Money Show because all we speak about is money. So shall we get underway a little bit? So coming up this week, we've got a few things that we're going to do. We're going to firstly break down everything going on to do with personal finance in the economy. Not the boring stuff, not the irrelevant stuff, the stuff that actually affects the money in your back pocket. And then every single week, we bring in an incredible range of experts, famous faces, personal finance geniuses to share their experiences, their advice, their knowledge with you when it comes to the topic of money. And this week, we've got two very well-known faces, actually. Number one, Casper Lee, a digital creator and entrepreneur. You might remember him from the good old YouTube days. And secondly, Devamsha Gumpert, the financial content creator who has actually inspired an absolute shit ton of the content that I've made. So I'm a big fan of her. I know her personally as well. And it's going to be a brilliant conversation. I can promise you that. But first, let's dive into the news because I love to bring you guys up to speed. A lot of the time, you'll probably sit there at your dinner table, at that weekend, you know, dinner party with your mates, and someone will ask you something that's going on in the news and you'll just stare at them blankly. Well, no longer, because I have got you covered. What is happening in the economy? What is happening that actually is going to affect the money in your pocket? Well, if you work in the hospitality sector, listen up. This might not be such good news. Over the past month, there's been a lot of conversation around the budget. Labour brought out a budget roughly a month ago. I feel like time is absolutely bloody flying at the moment. So it could have been a month ago. It could have been a year ago for all I know. But I think it was about roughly a month ago. And in that, she raised the taxes that businesses have to pay through national insurance. So you might have heard of national insurance from what comes out of your paycheck on a monthly basis. Well, companies have to pay a form of national insurance from their side as well. And that tax went up. If you know about this, I apologize, but I'm going to recap this exactly how it happened. It used to be roughly 13 and a bit percent. It's gone up now to 15%, but that wasn't all for businesses. The threshold at which they had to start paying national insurance dropped down to £5,000, essentially meaning that without even doing anything, the national insurance bill per employee for a lot of businesses went up by over £600 to £700. Now, you can imagine for some of the biggest businesses in the country, we're talking, you know, your Tesco's, your Amazon's, insert any name of any company that you can probably see on the high street right now, their bill to pay for employees has gone up massively. And has this affected them? Are they upset about it? You bet they are. They're so upset, they're actually writing in to Chancellor Rachel Reeves in a letter signed by the likes of Tesco, Amazon, Greggs, and dozens of other chains, urging the Treasury and our Chancellor to reconsider some of the burdens that they are putting on their industry. Now, why at the beginning did I in particular mention the hospitality sector? That is because as of this April, when a lot of the changes come into effect, they are going to be the hardest hit sector because traditionally their profit margins are quite small. We're talking somewhere in the region of 3 to 5% more or less. And with a huge spike in wages, you can understand that their bottom line gets eaten into quite a lot. Not just that, but national minimum wage is also going up quite dramatically. And the hospitality sector, yet again, is another one that employs a lot of people on this minimum wage. You know, part-time workers, university gigs, people that want to do a little bit of a side hustle on the weekend and want to work in a bar or something like that. These people are probably being paid somewhere in the region of national minimum wage. And for them, it's great news. They're getting a pay rise. For the businesses, it's awful news because they now need to eat into their profit margins in order to afford this rise in national insurance taxes as well as national minimum wage. But you bet these businesses aren't going to be covering these costs out of their own profit like I say they will. They're actually going to do probably one of two things. Number one is it's going to affect the people that work in the companies. We're looking at lower pay rises. We're looking at lower salaries altogether. And we're looking at less employees. So less hires, less jobs being available. But don't just sit there calmly if you aren't in that category. Because on the flip side, for you wanting to go out to the bar, go out to a nice hotel, go out to a restaurant, the prices of all of that stuff is going to go up as they pass on this burden to you as well. And this is essentially what they're saying in this letter. These changes to national insurance, to wages, is going to impact wage growth, impact employment, basically higher unemployment, and impact prices. And even Andrew Bailey, the head of the Bank of England, the governor of the Bank of England, has kind of confirmed that these things are going to take place. So what does this mean for you? What does this mean for the money in your back pocket? Well, if you don't work in that industry, just expect this April to see a little bit of a hike in prices from a lot of these places. You're talking about, you know, shopping at Tesco, your grocery shopping, going to the restaurant, going to the movies. All of these things are going to start to slightly increase as they cover this huge bill. The estimation right now is that 60% of this hike is going to be swallowed by both employees and people that need to pay. So consumers, 40% being covered by businesses. But in the long run, 5+ years, this is going to go up to as much as 80% being covered by us, the people, and not the businesses. So I suppose one question you could ask yourself, which we will not be covering today, is did the Chancellor Rachel Reeves fulfill her promise to not raise taxes on working people? Let's leave that one open-ended just for today. So what else is going on in the news? Well, the UK government borrowed quite a lot of money. In fact, they have borrowed so much that this is the second highest October figure since records began in 1993. I feel like I should pause now for anyone listening to try and guess how much the government borrowed last month in October. I'll give you a clue. It ends with billion and it starts with 17.4. Did you get close? Feel free to drop us a DM on at That Money Show on Instagram if you did get close and we'll think of some kind of prize. The prize will probably just be me clapping at home if you got that spot on. So this time last year, it was, I believe, somewhere in the region of 16 billion. We're now up to 17.4 billion. So is this everyone going to be crying out that the Labour government are doing a much worse job than the Conservative government because 1 year on we're spending a lot more? Well, no, because the Chancellor did kind of say that this was her plan to spend a lot more on the country. This is why your taxes are going up. Remember the whole news story that I told you just before? They're going up so there can be more spending on the economy. So like I said, this is the second highest October figure since 1993. So Chancellor Rachel Reeves is definitely coming through on her promise to increase spending. There was a forecast that it would be somewhere in the region of 12.3 billion, the borrowing this year, this month, last month even. That's obviously not come true. It's a lot higher than that. And let's understand kind of what are the reason for this. Well, the rising cost of public services, benefits, debt servicing, that is what's causing this borrowing increase. So basically, the Chancellor has tried to bring in more money into the government through these tax rises. But whilst these things start to take effect, like I said, the national insurance, the national minimum wage, that's not happening until April next year. So April 2025. In the meantime, the spending has still gone up. They've increased spending on the NHS. They've increased spending on, you know, the services, the rail, TfL, all that kind of stuff. That's why there haven't been so many strikes in the past month. If you were wondering why the tubes were running so smoothly if you live in London, that's because all of that spending has gone up. Now, the plan is in the future, over this 5-year period that Labour will be in Parliament, they will recoup a lot of that money from us through taxes. But I think one of the implications of this huge increase in borrowing is that despite Rachel Reeves kind of saying that she's going to be very reluctant to raise taxes in any future budget moving forward, I think that is not off the table in the slightest. This is going to be a bit of a, I would say, eye-dropping, answering it year where we see a lot of things and learn a lot of things to understand whether Labour's plan has actually, well, worked or not. And last but not least, I brought this up last week, but it's actually finally come true because last week it was a prediction. This week is a guarantee. Bills are going up. Energy bills are going up in January. Ofgem have told you that this will now be happening in terms of kind of the cap they put up. This is going up by £21 a year for the average house payer. And I always do stress this because often whenever someone brings up what's happening to the average price of energy, whether it goes up, whether it goes down, 1%, 10%, whatever it is, someone says, well, my energy bill went up way more than that. But yeah, you live in a house of 35 people and you all love to keep your light bulbs on and sleep in the light. That's probably why your energy bill is so high right now. When I refer to what's happening with the price of energy on a month-by-month basis, I am referring to a typical household, okay? So that means as of January, we're looking at £1,738. What I do want to say is this is much lower than this time last year. This is significantly lower than 2023, where the government had to actually step in with an energy price guarantee to stop our bills going up to over £4,000 on average. We're down at £1,738, but we're still 50% up on October of 2021, so about 3 years ago, where bills were roughly in the region of £1,200. So bills are going up. They're now at this new kind of level. They've actually been at this level more or less since July 2023. So I think we're settling in at this £1,700, £1,800, £1,900 level for the average typical household bill. And this is something to just be aware of. Ofgem are predicting a few price rises over the next 3 to 6 months coming up. And so that's why you'll hear someone like Martin Lewis all over the radio telling you to consider fixing your energy price right now before they do go up. And they're pretty much almost guaranteed to go up. I would add to that and say maybe start practicing some good energy saving tips, advice, all that kind of stuff. Turn things off after you turn them on. Turn off lights around your house. Lower your energy. There's this crazy thing that literally lowering your thermostat by about 1 degree can save hundreds of pounds a year on your energy bill. So if you're someone that loves to blast the heating in your house, A, consider turning it off whilst you're asleep because, you know, a good duvet should cover that for you. But B, just take it down from 29 degrees to 28. I mean, it shouldn't really be above 20 in the first place. But if you love a good sweat and you love your house being a sauna, go down to 28. You're going to save yourself a few bob. Or try and dig out that old Christmas jumper and start wearing it a little bit early, because that's another way to save yourself on your energy bill. I'm one of those people that firstly love a bit of a cold house, but also walk around in shorts in the middle of January. Maybe that's my own problem. If I put on a pair of trackies instead, I could save a bit on my energy bill. This is coming from that money guy. So yeah, you can see we've all got lessons to learn when it comes to energy saving. Like I said, they are guaranteed now to go up in January. It's not great news. So this might be the time to shop around. You know, it's Black Friday, so you should be kind of in your shopping mode anyway and looking for a good bargain. Maybe the energy providers want to get in on Black Friday this year as well and give us a good price. Probably not. All right, guys, that is everything. You are up to speed with the news. You are going to look so smart this Friday night at your dinner party, unless you've got a dinner party this... Oh, Christmas parties are probably starting. Go on, spread the knowledge. Spread the financial knowledge to the world. All right, guys, stick around. We're going to have a little short break, but straight after, I'm being joined by the one, the only, Casper Lee, the digital creator, the YouTube OG, and an entrepreneur.
FUPAR Radio. Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It's the sound of your mates alive. It's getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the
cray,
truth.
Cray.
And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister.
That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously they can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show, live on FUBAR Radio, with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, here to make you better with your money. It's a simple promise, but it's a great promise. Anyway, I did say that I was going to be joined by Casper Lee straight after that little break, and that is exactly what I'm going to do. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a conversation about the Sunday scaries. If you don't know what they are, you will after this.
I think the key question to ask you right off the bat is, what are the Sunday scaries?
So for me, Sunday scaries is when I have a big week coming up, and I don't feel fully prepared, especially when it comes to work. And I was a YouTuber for many years. I did that for about 12 years. And then I started a couple of businesses. And I actually never had the Sunday scaries as a YouTuber because that was the day I uploaded my videos. It was a Sunday. And so Monday was always like either like a celebration or, oh, I can't believe how that video flops. But now with businesses and all of the different work I do, having different schedules and traveling and maybe even doing like presentations where I'm feeling quite nervous, I love to use Gemini Live to help me prepare for my week, prepare for whatever the tasks I have. And it definitely helps with the Sunday scaries.
Got it. So what do you think that changeover in particular was? Was it literally going into more unknown territory, running a business compared to, you know, that kind of freestyle life of creating content? Like you said, Sunday was probably the most stressful day. So Monday, you were relaxed because the schedule restarted exactly. Again.
Yeah. So having a business means Monday to Friday are the work days. Being a YouTuber means you work all random hours. And you know, the transition was difficult actually for a while. Like I definitely felt imposter syndrome getting into situations where I'm like, you know, pitching to a client or trying to convince someone to come and work at the business. You know, it takes time to get comfortable at work. I think young people today, you know, it's not easy, especially with everything we've been through over the last few years, going from remote working to hybrid to like now sometimes being asked to come back in. And there's a lot of nerves that come with work, and you're really told, you know, you're really asked to push yourself sometimes. And that's something I definitely had to do over the last few years. But ultimately, it's made me more confident. And I'm really happy I went through that. And I'm now feeling like excited for the Sunday scaries because I know it means I'm pushing myself. I know it means I'm doing something that's going to stretch me and allows me to become like a more well-rounded person.
Yeah, I really like that kind of transformation in your mind. You can feel the exact same feelings, the exact same maybe a bit nervousness, increased heart rate, all that kind of stuff on a Sunday evening as, you know, you're preparing your Monday outfit and all that kind of stuff. But you're choosing to lean into that and use it for positive.
Yeah. Definitely. And there are like, you know, things you can do to, it's not like I love feeling scared, I love, you know, feeling scared and knowing that I can get better at this and it's going to get less scary. The more I practice it, the more I, you know, use coping mechanisms such as like breathing exercises. Like Gemini Live literally took me through a breathing exercise and helped me plan my outfit. And the more you do these things, and the more you go to work or present or pitch, the more you realize that being, you know, nervous is normal. And even, you know, some of the most important people in the world get nervous. I think it's actually more scary if you never get nervous.
I think I'd be scared of someone if they told me they didn't get nervous before big occasions in their life. And yeah, I agree. It's like you said, sometimes the best things in life happen on the other side of the most nervous aspects. I remember like giving a speech or like even presenting in front of school back in the day. Like you get up, you feel awful, you get through it. And then on the other side, there's this like huge relief and accomplishment. Which is huge. And like you mentioned also about videos, I created videos all the time, and I can cast my head back to 4 or 5 years ago kicking off. That first one, hitting record and pressing upload to the internet, crazy. Today I just do it without blinking. I can't tell you what's happened in the 4 years in between to get me there, but I suppose it's repetition.
Exactly.
You mentioned Gemini quite a few times, and I would love to dive into that because AI is everybody's favorite topic at the moment. But as popular as it is, I feel like there are still so many people that are kind of being left behind. They're not quite sure where to start, how to start, how to use it, what to do. So in particular with the Sunday Scaries, preparing yourself for a week ahead, making sure that you've got this like mini assistant in your pocket, what are the best ways that people can start to utilize AI to improve their life?
Yeah, I mean, simply you can start by asking it, how can you help me? I think some people think like you have to come up with these like really complex inputs, which is like how you ask it to give you outputs. But I think you can actually, the difference between Gemini Live and maybe what we previously had to do to get information is dramatic, and you can kind of speak to it in your own way, and it will help you get there over time. And so I'd say the best way to start is just to literally play with it. Gemini Live is literally something you have on your Google Pixel installed, on your Google Pixel 9, and you can basically say, hey, how can you help me with my work related fear, or hey, how can I use you, like how can you assist me, and you'll be very surprised with all of the different things. And I'm constantly blown away by all the ways like our employees at the various companies I've co-founded are using it. Like for example, we at the management company, we get a lot of brand briefs explaining like what a talent needs to do for a brand deal. And then we have to create easy digests, which are basically documents that we then translate the brief into something easy for the talent to understand. And we realized like we were creating all of these easy digests, which take 2 hours. And all we need to actually do is feed it what our easy digest looks like, feed it a brief and say, now turn this brief into something like that. And it happens. And there's just so many things like that. From even like as a YouTuber, I spent hours and hours creating subtitles when I made a video. Now we laugh at that. You can literally just use CapCut and whatever tool you want to use to do that. And so see Gemini Live is that, but like an assistant who's always around. And someone you need to learn how to manage as well, but they can also teach you how to manage them. So yeah,
that's, I love that. It's nice perpetual cycle of you asking them how to do things, them telling you, and you can kind of keep going back and forth. I'd love to get some specific examples, because earlier on in the call you already discussed breath work, asking it what you can wear. So let's say you are sat there, it's a Sunday, it's, you know, 5-6 p.m. I don't know what time you go to bed, but let's pick that time for now. And you're thinking, you know, crap, big week ahead, how can I make my life a little bit easier right now? Let's go through some actual examples of things that you might have done in the past, or like you said, you've got colleagues at work that have used it in really clever ways, just so that we can inspire some people with some prompts to kick things off with.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I needed some, I was actually at work and I needed some quick breathing exercises to fit in. And I just said, hey, Gemini, like, can you give me some breathing exercises? I've got a high stress situation coming up. And it helped. Another thing I love doing, if you're talking about at home, maybe before like a big week ahead, maybe I have a presentation come up, I shared the presentation with it. in terms of like my talking points. And I said, I'm struggling to learn this. Can you please have a conversation with me about it in which you teach me the presentation? And I'm like very much a learner when it comes to a conversation versus just like reading things. Mm-hmm. So using it for that. And in terms of like prompts, like you can literally say it in the way you want to say it. It's not like you need the particular ones. And so, yeah, it's more like, what are you looking for? Then don't be afraid to ask how it can help and you'll figure out the rest.
That's wicked. And I think that you're spot on. However, I would add there are always some limitations and it's always important to know that with AI, as it's probably still evolving hugely. What it's going to look like in a year from now is going to be very different even to how we're using it today. So I like to tell people, let it inspire you, but not dictate you, because otherwise there could be some messy situations.
I think it's also really good at that. I feel like that, you know, Google has done quite a good job of like also disclaiming that a lot. So you'll see when you ask, you know, I don't know, legal advice. Like I was negotiating an estate agency agreement. It will give you some like broad advice, which would be really hard to find yourself. But then it also makes sure to say, hey, like also consult a lawyer and so on.
The important things. This is not official legal advice. Exactly. Yeah, I can imagine how that might get Google into some trouble if they didn't make those kind of disclaimers. Just before we finish the interview, I kind of want to potentially move even a little bit away from AI for now. I have actually just become an employer for the first time in my life, which is pretty crazy. I've been running my own business for 2 years. Yeah. I've just hired someone pretty much 7 days ago today. So they'll be listening to this and thinking, oh, that's me. But maybe I can ask some specific advice from you a few years down the line from me. You know, I've also a content creator, been making videos for 4 years, and now I'm bringing people into the team to help me do that. What can I do to help my employees, you know, succeed at their job, enjoy things, not just today, not just this week, not just even the first month of their job, but a year from now, they look at me and they go, I'm just as excited to come to work on a Monday as I was, you know, the first time that I signed basically the contract to join. Yeah. I know that's really broad, but I'd love to get any tips and tricks from you.
Oh, great. I mean, I think it changes depending on how many employees you have in terms of like the structures you have to create to make sure that people both feel valued, also understand what's going on, and are all aligned in terms of like this personality kind of types you want to bring into your organization and build the culture around. But when it comes to like one employee or a couple employees, I think actually when it comes to, it doesn't matter how many employees, you need to have like a clear vision that everyone knows this is what they're coming to do. So just because, you know, maybe, for example, you have a production company, you could say, yeah, we make shows. What's our vision as a company? What do we want to do differently? What are we good at? How are we going to take over the world of production? And I think that's something people can buy into. And I also think today, they also, you know, younger employees buy into people who are genuine leaders. Rather, I hate to use the word authenticity, so I'm starting to use the word genuine because everyone uses authenticity. but like, so be careful about trying to like, you know, when you stand up and give a talk or try, you know, stand up in front of your single employee and try and talk to them. You've got to be careful to not just try hit all the buzzwords and say all the right things. Like, I think people see through that today and they want the reality. So when you do set your vision or you set your company values and you try and remind everyone about them, make sure these are real things that aren't just aspirational. They need to be like stuff you're already doing well. And then you can you'll be surprised how you can build around that. And we actually implement this system called EOS at our company, Influencer. We've got about 150 people now. So like, it's basically an employee operating system that helps us organize everyone, make sure we're on the same page, make sure we're hiring correctly, make sure we're marketing to the right people. And I highly recommend reading the book Traction, which is basically explains this system. And it's been transformational for our organization and a lot of great organizations that I've invested in or I've heard about. So I think it's a great one.
Casper, you're speaking my language. A book recommendation is genuinely my favorite thing in life. And I haven't even considered thinking about book recommendations on how to kind of be a better employer. So that's my first ever one.
Great.
So I'll have to let you know how it goes. And Any like specific techniques, I suppose, just for like a healthy work-life balance? Should I be like telling my employees to shut their laptop at 6 o'clock, or telling them on a Friday to take it chill? Or do I just let them essentially build out their own systems to be happy at work?
Yeah, I think it's so important that you just hire people who are going to kind of do the right things to get their job done. Obviously, you've got to be very careful as a manager to manage workload. But if you are doing that correctly and you've got that balance right, they should be able to take care of a lot of the decisions around when to shut their laptops and so on. Nobody wants to see employees burning out, and you've got to manage that. But ultimately, especially when you're in a startup, you also have to be careful not to be like hiring people who, as soon as they see the clock turn 5, that's when they close like their laptops, because hiring, a startup is difficult. It comes with a lot of perks for employees and founders, but it also comes with a lot of hustle and just getting the job done. So I'd recommend just getting the right people with the right culture, and then you don't have to worry so much about the small things.
Amazing. I really appreciate that. I think like what you said is basically, ultimately they're going to kind of show you how they work and present to you, and you kind of have to use that feedback to essentially see if they're happy or not and react to the decisions they're making on their own.
You can obviously manage and coach people and help people and try and empower them, but I have found that when you consistently hire people who are those sorts of people who like care about what they do, then that kind of all sorts itself out, and you can't hire the wrong people and then expect to be able to like fix it through systems.
Yeah, AI might be brilliant, but it can't fix a bad hire. Exactly. Not yet, at least. Give it 12 months and we'll see what you can do. Casper, honestly, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. And looking forward to implementing some stuff and asking Gemini a few questions of my own.
Definitely.
And I'll let you know how the book goes. Looking forward to getting my first one in as How to Be a Good Boss.
Great.
Thanks.
Thanks, Gabriel.
Well, what do you think? A lot of good questions. I hope the Sunday scaries have become the Sunday sunnies. That's good. I've just flipped an entire narrative on its head. Anyway, guys, it is time for Money Tip of the Week. This is a period where I give you something short, something practical, something for you to take away after the end of the show, because otherwise you stop listening and we don't want that either, that you can do to immediately get you better with money. And a number of these tips have been around Black Friday because, well, ultimately it's Black Friday this Friday, so I might as well keep on topic. And this is all about when is the best time to actually do your shopping, because there's a lot of pre-Christmas sales that happen well after Black Friday, and even so much so that apparently 30% of things are cheaper in the run-up to Christmas than on Black Friday, and 22% of things or items are cheaper at the start of November than on Black Friday. So here is what you're going to do. You're going to see something. It's for a good price. It's something that you wanted to buy anyway. It's on sale, okay? You can buy it, obviously. Make sure your budget and et cetera, et cetera. But you can buy it. But keep the receipt and keep tracking that item for as long as you have, until you are not able to return that item anymore. Because for a number of items, they are going to drop in price, potentially in the lead up to Christmas, potentially on Boxing Day, potentially in the early January sales. And a lot of companies have extended return periods around this time of year. So it's not 30 days anymore. It's much longer than that. So that's Money Tip of the Week. Hold on to your receipts. Track the things that you are buying over the Black Friday sale. So go ahead and buy them if they're at a good price. But if you can get them cheaper, definitely do that. Anyway, guys, stick around, because I'm after this short break, I'm joined by Devamsha Gumper, the financial content creator.
Fubar Radio. Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, "John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets?" I went back to the bloke, said, "Yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do." What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the
crying,
truth.
Crying.
And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle.
It is.
I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my Yes I Yes sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen, they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. We are live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And as I said earlier, I'm going to be joined in the studio by one of my favourite finance creators very, very shortly in Devampshire. If you haven't seen or heard her before, she is that financial hot girl, I believe, is the correct lingo. Correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, joining me now in the studio is Devampshire. How are you doing? It's so nice to have you on the show.
I'm doing well. It's so nice to be here. I'm so excited to speak to you.
I know, I'm buzzing. For those of you that don't know, I'm going to give some context. Me and Dev do know each other. We have met, like, part of the finance community, the people that are trying to make you better with your money through the internet. Don't ask us why we chose this career, but we did. So I'm really excited to kind of, like, dive into this interview and find out more about you and share more about your journey with That Money Show's audience. But, I mean, like, let's start right at the beginning. Like, why create a page on the internet to help people get better with money? Because even though it sounds very altruistic, it's kind of weird when you say it out loud.
Yeah, of course. And I started in COVID. So when COVID first started, so it was like April 2020, I was in a really bad place with my money. I was like probably at the worst point in my own personal finance journey. I was in credit card debt. I struggled with my like money mental mindset. I had already kind of thought about creating content. Like, I'd grown up on YouTube. I watched a lot of like the OG YouTubers, which is ironic for the guest you've had on today. And I basically combined the two desires. I was trying to learn more about my own finances, but I also wanted to start creating content online. So the thing that was on my mind was, okay, how can I get out of credit card debt? How can I improve my money habits? Can I be someone who invests? And I kind of shared as I went on. And that eventually kind of snowballed into what I do today, which is, you know, creating that personal finance content for the everyday person, but also kind of wrapped up in a little bit more, you know, like career content, business, entrepreneurship, and navigating the world, the messy world of money as an adult.
Yeah, I was going to say, because one thing that you do so nicely through social media is you go far beyond just being a personal finance content creator. You are quite literally sharing the lessons of your own life as you learn them, whether that be in like health, in wealth, in mindset, in so many different areas. And I think it kind of like brings a whole more kind of like holistic approach to understanding who you are and building that kind of authentic relationship with your audience. So how did you go about building, I suppose, a bit of a social media following? Was there a tactic behind it, or was it just, I'm going to post some shit and people seem to keep liking it?
Well, I think there was no tactic at the beginning, but then it eventually did turn into that. Like, I did realize that people liked me. They liked the way I expressed a concept through my own story, but it did start with storytelling. I am someone who loves details. I love high-level concepts, but I love to know, like, the roadmap, the strategy, the step-by-step. Like, how can I do something today that turns into something, like, amazing tomorrow? Like, how can I start off being in debt and then end up 5 years later being, like, someone with investments, right? How does that actually work? And I shared that on, like, a much more feet-on-the-ground basis. And I think that's a great way to build a social media presence, I think, especially if you think today that it's a lot more common to kind of, I say more common, I'm probably in a social media bubble, but I feel like it's not as weird now to say, oh, I make videos online, or I create content, or I have a blog or a newsletter. It's like, it's a little bit more accepted. And I feel like sharing your learnings or sharing content that is your life is a great way to grow. And that's kind of what I did. And then, like you say, I realized that people liked it. I got that, you know, the little external validation and gave me the good signs to keep going in the direction of personal finance as well. Because as I learned more, I shared more, and it was connecting more with the right people.
I love all of that. And I'm going to start quizzing you a little bit on some of the kind of financial tips that you do share on the internet, because I think they're so brilliant and personable and different to, I suppose, the classic ones that maybe even I kind of tend to fall into, the lot of pitfalls and topics that I like to discuss. But first, I do want to talk about the more recent, I suppose, evolution of your journey on the internet. Because I was going to say recently, but it's not so recent anymore that you quit your job to go full time into building a business around, I suppose, your social media personality. But I suppose well beyond that as well, the lessons that you learned in terms of building a personal brand. What made you decide to leave quite a good job, because I know that you were kind of in consulting and tech and that world, to launch yourself into what you're doing today? Why did you make that decision? How did you make it? And what are you up to now?
That's a very loaded question. I'd actually say, you know what, 6 months, I quit 6 months ago. Well, I officially left 6 months ago.
Congratulations again, by the way.
Thank you so much. I feel like it's not been, like, it's not that long, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. But I made the decision because I just did not feel myself in corporate at all. But I had convinced myself from the moment I had gone to uni, and also probably up until, you know, last year, I'd convinced myself that corporate was the thing that I had to do in order to get that stability, get the solidify the future, you know, really ingrain that status into like my community and how I've grown up. It's the way to stability, really. And I essentially decided to leave because it's probably the most impulsive decision I've ever made in my life, even though it's not that impulsive. I didn't wake up and just hand in my notice. But I basically kind of decided that, you know, content creation, social media, it was a platform and a route that was going to take me a lot closer to where I could be myself. Like, I knew I always wanted to start a business. I always thought it was just going to be on the side of a corporate job or on the side of something that's a bit more stable. And social media has given me a little bit of the confidence I think I needed to know that I don't need corporate in order to do those things, or I don't need like a full-time 9-to-5 in order to do those things. So it was a decision whereby I thought, if I don't see myself in corporate long term and I don't feel myself in corporate, I need to stop giving 50% to everything and then just pick one thing to give 100% to. So that's what kind of led me to leaving. And like you said, now I'm kind of just trying to build almost like an operational system to back up what I've been doing for the last few years, which has just been posting content and creating like a media business almost, but haven't had like a much of an operations to back it up. So that's what I've spent the last few months doing to try and solidify kind of like long-term future in this industry.
Watch this space, people. Watch this space. Very exciting times ahead, and very exciting that you left your job and decided to fall into that fully. I'm sure you'll inspire quite a few people that are maybe on the edge as well of making that decision that potentially it's the right one to do. Or maybe they'll think the opposite and be like, hell no. After listening to that, that's absolutely not what I want to do, full stop. So you do give a lot of financial lessons through kind of your own learnings on the internet. And I do want to kind of quiz you on a few of them. This isn't me like taking you down personally, by the way. This is just general questions that people might have about money. But number one is, you speak to a lot of people on the internet. What are the most common financial mistakes that you often see from people, especially in their 20s?
Especially in their 20s. I think in your 20s, you statistically have the least amount of money you really should have over the course of your lifetime, right? And in your 20s, your biggest expenses, if you think about like the 80-20 rule, your biggest expenses are those living costs, like rent, bills, utilities, things like that. I feel like from, you know, my conversations with people in my audience and kind of general trends that we've seen online, I feel like one of the biggest mistakes is focusing too much on, you know, quote unquote, soft life, or not keeping your expenses as low as they could be in your 20s in favor of living your best life, or, you know, maximizing your youth, things like that, where actually you could take a bit of a 50-50 approach to your expenses and having a good time, still make a little bit of financial padding for your 30s and 40s and beyond, you know, and still kind of enjoy your life. It's like not all or nothing when actually in your 20s, you're kind of pushed to the wall a little bit with your expenses and how much money you have to spend. And then the second big thing is obviously, as you might know as well, postponing investing and like looking out for your future because you feel like that time or that phase in your life is just so distant, and it almost takes away from what you could do now. And then a small mistake I think I've seen as well is kind of neglecting your emergency fund and, you know, getting that like first £1,000 or £100 saved, again, in favor of like your youth and like doing as much as you can in your 20s, because when else will you ever have no responsibilities, things like that. So I think from an overall perspective, those are the top three mistakes I see.
Three brilliant ones and three lessons that I suppose people can take immediately. On that emergency fund one, I see or I hear from so many people that have built it up. So they get that a grand that they finally, like, they struggled to save their entire life. They've got a grand away. And then a month later, like, oh, but I ended up going into it. And I go, oh, that's fine. Like, did you have an emergency? They were like, no. And I was like, you know, like, you described it to me yourself. It's an emergency fund. It's fine to spend from it, but not for drinks out with your mates because it's almost Christmas. Like, that's absolutely not allowed. So yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure on people to obviously get better with their money, especially young people in their 20s. Like you mentioned, that pull and push between living and saving and being sensible but having fun. And yeah, I repeat the word balance so many times to my audience or anyone that ever asks, because there is a balance to be done. You don't have to listen to the gurus that are telling you to join the FIRE movement, for those of you who don't know, in like retiring by the age of 40. Don't need to do that, people. It's absolutely fine. We're going to live till, most of us are going to live till 100. So maybe you don't want to not be working for 60 of those years. We've got Black Friday obviously coming up around the corner. This is like the season of spending. Like, I, even as someone who's meant to be good with money, is getting wrapped up in it. Don't ask me what I bought on Nike last night. Like, I just was on there and I was like, you know what, I'm just, screw it, I'm just going to buy it. And I had budgeted it for it, people, but it doesn't mean I didn't get caught in the trap. What is your general advice to people to kind of curb this overspending that happens now, or kind of temptation to just buy things because they've got that big red sale price next to them, which is pretty much happening from as of 2 weeks ago for the next 2 months?
Yeah. I think during this time especially, right, your emotions around sales, it's harder to fight that, like, naturally. And my approach to most things in life, but especially spending, impulse spending, emotionally driven spending, is building a system that you can fall back on instead of having to like rely on like your own willpower or your own like discipline and your financial goals and things like that. Because as nice as it is to have those things, it's hard to stick to it, especially now. Oh, so one of my favorite systems is kind of like implementing a marinating list. I don't know if you've seen me talk about this on my socials.
No, I haven't.
But it's basically like a list where you can, if you want to buy things, put them on this list and let them marinate, because there's something, I can't remember the stat completely, so I'm going to paraphrase here, but something like 70 or 80% of millennials, they regret any non-essential or like want style purchases within 24 or 72 hours. I know that's a very wide gap, but it's something quite soon of making that purchase. You feel regret quite soon. So implementing something like a marinating list where you can put that purchase there, and then maybe after, whether it's 3 days or maybe a week or 2 weeks, you revisit and then you check if you actually still want to buy that thing. And I personally do this all the time. And I literally, 90% of the things on that list, I just don't want anymore. I've literally forgotten that you even placed it on the list, which is a great tactic. But then you can do like practical things like separating your savings, not keeping your, you know, like not having Apple Pay. I feel like that's such a simple thing that once you don't do it, you just create so much friction to actually being able to proceed through that checkout process. And then like little things where you can curate, you know, what you see online, creating a new email for like shopping experiences and things so that you're actually physically not bombarded with the sales and the temptation. And you can actually choose to go into that email inbox if you want to, and you're not having to like fight that resistance every single day. So these, little things like that.
These are brilliant. I think I've got my own version of the marinating list, and there's been a robot vacuum on that for about 3 years. And I was about to buy one like on like Black Friday 3 years ago. And I was like, I'm just going to write it down. I don't need that right now. And that is staying on the marinating list. In fact, it's probably about time that I remove it. Dev, where can people find out more from you just before I do say goodbye?
I am on Instagram and YouTube just with my first name, Devamsha, and I'm on TikTok at Devamsha Gunput.
There we go. Please, people, go and follow. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, there we go. That was Devamsha. I would highly, highly recommend you go and check out her socials. She's brilliant on a lot of the stuff that you're thinking when it comes to money, but she says it out loud. So it's not like financial lessons like how to X, how to Y, how to Z. It's more about like the overspending stuff. She'll actually share her own personal experience with that and, you know, give you the real answers you are looking for. Anyway, I don't need to say any more because you can literally go and find her on social media and do that yourself. Every single week, you guys write in questions. You DM us on @thatmoneyshow on Instagram. That is the official page for this show. And when you ask us questions on there, we answer them right here during the show. So thank you very much to the two of you that, well, the two questions that we have selected this week. Number one is from Hudson, who has said, I am 27. Is it too late to start a pension? And how do I go about starting one? Hudson, not only is it not too late, you are bloody on time to start your pension. In fact, you're early compared to most people. Get started. How do you do it? Firstly, if you are employed, you should be on an auto-enrollment from your company. So they should have automatically got you paying into a pension unless you opted out. Now, I don't like the idea of opting out. I know some people have to opt out because of personal circumstances. But if you can, the reasons to opt in are your company match that payment in some levels or some cases. Well, in most cases. So according to the government's law, if you put in 5%, at the very least, your company needs to put in an extra 3%. That is a bonus. That is an extra bit of money that you are leaving on the table if you do not contribute to your pension. And not only that, most companies offer something higher than that. So like a match, so 5-5. Or if you put in 10, they'll put in 10. This is all free money towards future you. Do not neglect this. But if you are not employed and you cannot go down that route, you can always opt for a self-employed personal pension. A SIP, if you may well. You can check these out on the internet by looking up best places to open a SIP. And you can invest on there into a pension. And I would always say the earlier the better. There's a general rule of thumb. Take your age. So if you are 27, divide it by 2. That is 13.5. My math has not left me here today. 13.5% of your entire net pay, well, no, your gross pay even, should be going into your pension from now until you retire. 13.5%. Imagine if you started at 40, that would go up to 20%. So that's a little bit of a good rule to take going forward. And the second and last question I'm going to answer is, I'm about 2 months away from paying off my debt, which has accumulated over the past 5 years. However, I need some advice on what I should do with my finances now the debt has been paid off, as I've not been in a positive financial situation for so long. Help. I would point you in the direction of two words that were said regularly on this show. Emergency fund. Emergency funds are not only incredible things to cover your ass in the circumstance that your car breaks down, your boiler breaks down, you lose your job, you just need cash all of a sudden. That is what the emergency fund is for. But the peace of mind that that thing is going to give you, knowing that you've got £1,000 tucked away as an insurance policy, should shit hit the fan, is like game changing. So we're not talking just from a mathematical perspective. From a financial perspective, having an emergency fund will change your life. This is up to 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses tucked away in a cupboard, not in a cupboard, in a bank or in an account somewhere to cover you if something goes wrong. Then, of course, look into things like employer matching with your pension, like I was just talking about, or opening up ISAs, cash ISAs, lifetime ISAs, or stocks and shares ISAs, one of my favorite products, which we can dive into next week if the right person DMs us on that at That Money Show and asks us that question. Anyway, unfortunately, everyone, that is all we have time for this week. So I want to say quickly thank you to Casper Lee and to Damampshire for sharing their personal finance knowledge and about the socials, Sunday scaries, Sunday sunnies, as I like to call them now. Remember, you can listen to us back on any platform that you get your podcasts on. You can find us on Instagram at That Money Show, and you can download the FUBAR Radio app to listen live every single week. I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And as promised, you're now better with your money.
FUBAR Radio.